Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRouche Show for Saturday, January 2nd, 2010. The new year. Happy New Year to everyone. This is Marcia Mary Baker, and I'm glad that we can kick off the first of the new year programs with the theme that we're going to defeat the British Empire. That is our topic today, repulsing the British Empire onslaught, which is coming at us in many forms, not because they're so all-powerful, but because they're all crazy right now. And I'm very glad that we have a transatlantic panel of two to take up the discussion, which includes here on the East Coast near Washington with me in the studio, Michelle Steinberg. Welcome, Michelle.
Hi, Marcia.
Who needs no introduction, but I'm going to say, Michelle, she was our founding host of the LaRouche Show, and among many things she does for EIR, she does counterintelligence, and especially with the specialty of Southwest Asia, which is one of the things we'll be talking about today. And from the West Coast, we welcome in Seattle, Rihanna Nordquist. Welcome, Rihanna.
Hi, thank you.
And likewise, there are many things that could be said about Rihanna, but one thing is you are part of the whole leadership in the Americas of the Pacific Coast right now, and I think that's for the LaRouche Youth Movement, for LaRouche Political Action Committee, and we are very glad to have you today. And let me just put it this way, there are many hideous events of the day as the year starts. We've seen on Christmas Eve that the Hitler health care bill was pushed through the Senate, which is worse than Hitler because in some ways, it had a clause in it that is especially unconstitutional. It said that not only are people to be killed through a medical advisory board decision-making clause, but it could never be changed. The Congress could never change it. It had to exist in perpetuity. We also look around the world outside the United States and see many strategic hotspots, especially in connection with Southwest Asia and the danger of Israeli attack on Iran, but in general, the persistent misery and strife in this part of the world and elsewhere, and also a terrorist act we've seen over the Christmas period. We can get to that. Blatant terrorism. So our topic, though, our focus, rather, is the common source of this is what we're calling the British Empire, the London-centered, long-standing financial and control operations against nation-states, period, that have been operating through globalization, speculation, and intent to just reduce the world's population and the world to rubble. And we're in a phase now where the physical economic breakdown is extreme, and but let's point out that the potential to make a shift is also very great. And that brings us to the reality that it's been the LaRouche Political Action Committee, Mr. LaRouche himself and close associates, who've been unitarily intervening for people to know in the United States and internationally the pedigree of this, the British Empire pedigree. And let me just throw out right now that Lyndon LaRouche himself has set up that the Political Action Committee in the United States will host an international webcast January 30th. And I believe that is a Saturday. And that will be probably at 1 p.m. Eastern time out of the United States. Look for that on LaRouchePAC.com. We're also you can find Mr. LaRouche's latest writings and also on our EIR online, especially his paper on national banking. And I also want to throw out at the beginning of the year, speaking of the opportunity we have to change things, we're in a new phase. We have some progress we could even review for mankind. But there are candidates declaring for office in Congress associated with LaRouche's emergency plan policies that are going to lead the charge. And one of them in Texas, Keisha Rogers, filed for ballot status. She's in the congressional district number 22. up in Boston, Rachel Brown is running against Bonnie Fwank, and we're going to get rid of him. And Rachel Brown, I've seen a lot of myself when I had insomnia and watched late night television. I heard Barney Frank being replayed, denouncing Rachel Brown for being a dining room table. So, and we have in California against Nancy Pelosi. Fortunately, Summer Shields will be running against her. So this is where we stand. It's only January 2nd, and watch out. And with that, well, in fact, I want to quote Mr. LaRouche on one thing I heard. He was briefing staff earlier today, and he said, regarding the whole situation, "Sorry, Your Majesty, but we're Americans. We ain't going to take this." He didn't say that latter, but we're Americans. So I want to start from Seattle, if Rihanna could give an overview, because I understand over the holiday weeks, which no matter how terrible the situation people's physical lives are in, sometimes the holiday spirit is a mess. I understand, Rihanna, you and your team have been leading a campaign somebody called Get Thee Behind Me, Satan. Santa, sorry, Get Thee Behind Me, Santa. Which is, you've been leading a charge against for people to understand what they're up against in the way of the foreign invasion.
Yeah, that's right. And in fact, traditionally street organizing in the period around Christmas and then the week, particularly the week between Christmas and New Year, is very difficult. Even though there's a lot of people on the street, usually, it's also a time when people are apt to be very inward turning, very oriented toward the small things in life. And very hectic generally. And so it can be very hard to get them to think politically. And this year has been very unique. In fact, our street organizing has been the most successful around Christmas and that it's ever been. In fact, it's been more successful this period than it has been going into it, which I find very, very interesting. Part of it is really this campaign that Lyndon LaRouche has put forward in terms of identifying exactly what the Congress is up to in its attack on the U.S. Constitution itself, and this clause that's in the Senate bill that says that it can never be changed, which neuters the Congress. I mean, it takes away all of the really the sovereignty of the legislative body, and it nullifies our Constitution. And we were able to convey that to people in a way that people were resonating with that I've never really seen before. Because we didn't have to describe very much. We just explained what this was really about, and then said, "Look, we're dealing with the British Empire. This is an attack by a foreign power." And people would snap out of the holiday daze and come over, and they wanted to do something. And of course, that's the better people. I mean, we were also, things were very polarized overall. And of course, if you go out onto the street with signs with Barack Obama sporting a Hitler mustache, you're likely to get some pretty volatile responses. But again, this has been very interesting because in the Christmas period, often people just sort of ignore all of that. They don't want to think about politics at all, and they'll just sort of put their head down and not look at you. But then there was this very real sense of volatility. And part of that is the fact that people are facing a very difficult year ahead. Many people are losing all of the stability that they thought they had built up for themselves in retirement or in middle age. They're using their college funds to pay for the rent, these kinds of things. And so when they saw that this political action committee there on the street, people were responding. And it's very, very exciting because it's people from all different areas demographically of the population. We were having quite young people in their early 20s doing very large contributions. And wanting to become very active with us. That was the other thing that was quite exciting, was that we had a number of people come out and organize with us for the first time, even in this very difficult period, and it's cold and all of those things that you might imagine, but they really wanted to be there and to fight this. And so it bodes well for the United States in a certain sense, because you really do feel that there is a patriotic impulse in the population, even if it's latent. The sleeping giant that was awoken in August is still there.
Great. Do you want to say more about it, Michelle? This patriotic basis for what's going on?
Well, that is really a very inspiring report, and I could just add a couple of things about what the world actually looks like without our intervention. You have a situation in Southwest Asia. There is a growing imminent danger of what Mr. LaRouche has called a virtual trigger for World War III should the British puppet known as Israel go ahead and launch a preemptive attack against Iran, which has been in the offing since the Bush-Cheney regime came into power. And I mean, if you just think about the kinds of terrorism and strategy of tension that has gone on Christmas Eve, you had a attack on the Roman Catholic Pope right in the middle of the Christmas services. You had a terrorist attack on a Northwest Airlines airplane inbound for Detroit, Michigan from Amsterdam, which was so amateurish that it was obviously a test. It was a test. We were discussing it today with Mr. LaRouche, with his leadership group. It was a test to see, will the American people take this or will they fight back? You had a assault on the Prime Minister of Italy just at the point of the Copenhagen meeting, where he was smashed in the face with a heavy statue that was thrown at him by an agent of Prince Philip's World Wildlife Fund. You had 8 American CIA agents killed in Afghanistan and the circumstances are not clear, but from what we can tell, the suicide bomber at least was wearing an Afghan army uniform. He may have stolen it. That's one cover story that's out. On the other hand, he may have been an infiltrator who was actually trained in the military by the U.S. and NATO forces. So this is supposedly the great strategy that that LaRouche has called Stanley McChrystal's folly, that Obama has bought, perpetual war in Southwest Asia to protect the British opium trade. So this has been far from a holiday situation. And I think, media aside, the billions and billions of dollars of ridiculous advertising, buy this, buy that, sale event of the century, buy, go into more debt, go out there and consume, all of that insanity just did not work with the American people. And I'll just add one thing. It is the greatest of travesties, in my view, to push this piece of satanic Nazism, this health care bill, through on Christmas Eve, not in religious terms, but in basic moral terms. One of our upcoming issues of Executive Intelligence Review is going to recap again, Marcia, what you and Nancy Spanis in particular researched. What Nancy Spanis researched when she went back to the Nuremberg trials of Dr. Carl Hond and the Tiergarten 4 program, the decision to eliminate, through the lack of medical care or through, like, the Liverpool protocol, active intervention to drug people until they are dead because they are disabled or old or they cost too much for the bankers to support in the state. That is what went through on Christmas Eve in the United States Congress. And the kind of response that I think Rihanna was describing, where people really want to be out there and fight, if they understand that this is a foreign-driven, an alien policy imposed on the United States and against the United States, if they understand that we are fighting a foreign enemy with these policies, the patriotism that really is what was envisioned by the founding fathers, a kind of humanity in perpetuity, not fascism in perpetuity. This is going to provoke a patriotic response, and the British Empire is going to get the biggest defeat since the American Revolution, as they did in Copenhagen. So you've got those two conflicting realities, and our job is leadership. Our job is to make the fight crystal clear, and I think that's what our movement, particularly led by the youth movement contingent, is doing.
Let me just interpose here what you've raised up, just for people to remind people the exact wording that we have to cut health care, people are going to die, and that's the way it's going to be, and it can never be changed by Congress. That section of the what the Senate passed that Michelle said Christmas Eve morning, it says no increase in total Medicare program spending. Any proposal has to keep the Medicare program spending underneath a certain amount and so forth. But then here is the wording, and I quote, "It shall not be an order in the Senate or the House of Representatives to consider any bill, resolution, amendment, or conference report that would repeal or otherwise change this subsection." And the subsection is the one that sets up a medical board to decide who will not get treatment. So that's how, now this wasn't known, right, Michelle? I mean, nobody, you've been involved, I think, in some of the EIR efforts to get the word out fast. Can you say
Yeah, not only was it a foreign attack on our republic, but it was a sneak attack. What we've pieced together, and you could read this in the upcoming issue of EIR, was for months and months and months and months, there was this proposal for an independent medical advisory council, IMAC. Then people exposed it for what it was, a death panel, a panel above the authority of the we didn't call it a death panel. It came from the Republican Party, and it became somewhat famous because it was on Sarah Palin's blog, and she's backed off from this, you know, because that's the way it is. People do things from other parties, and they back off from them. Lyndon LaRouche never backs off. That's the strength of our movement. He understands the British are the enemy. But so IMAC was not written into any bill until the very last minute. But they have been talking up since IMAC was first thought of, the possibility of, but what if some future Congress comes along and repeals it? We have to do something about that. So somewhere between mid-November and mid-December, when Harry Reid released the final bill, inserted into it was this section that Marcia just quoted. It shall not be in order. It will be held out of order. It will be illegal, basically, for Congress, after this bill is passed and signed, to introduce any kind of legislation. That is ridiculous. That is so unconstitutional that it is time to live the Declaration of Independence once again, when in the course of human events, there are conditions which are so intolerable that we reach up to the stars, to our inalienable rights, and say, this is enough. And this, for every patriot who's listening, every patriot who's listening, who knows others who aren't listening, get people to join us, get people to fight, get to the war room center of this battle, the LaRouche Political Action Committee website, and join the fight. And I think probably Rihanna has a lot more to tell us in terms of the ups and downs of that process, especially the ups. That's what people need to know about.
Yeah. Well, one thing that's very interesting in this period as well is that you have a complete disillusion of the two parties. And you know, what we're getting a lot is people coming up and saying, "Well, you know, I'm not really with a party. You know, I'm unique. I'm independent." And you say, "Well, you're not really unique. You represent more than 50% of the population at this point. They don't identify with a party for a lot of the reason that Michelle was just describing." With the way that Sarah Palin took up what we had exposed in a pamphlet that we had gotten out in mass after April, which was the original image of Barack Obama with Hitler. And it said, act now to stop Obama's Nazi health plan. And we had gotten this out to these town hall meetings, which I think really surprised a lot of people. I think it surprised the leadership of both the Republican and the Democratic Party significantly. They were not expecting this, at least from what I could see on the ground. And I was actually on the ground in a number of different states at that period of time. I was sort of lucky for other reasons. So I was in Boston. I saw it in Houston. I saw it in Seattle, where suddenly you had this outpouring of people to the town hall meetings. And the real issue was the incumbents, the congressmen. And it wasn't just the health care, although they were rallying around that. And because of that, the Republican Party took the opportunity to do something, which was somewhat useful. And Palin came out with this statement, which was really based on what we had been putting out. And as Michelle says, she's now backed off. As many people in the Republican Party have done, they want to nominally be the leadership of the mass strike, but they don't actually want to fight. They don't really want it. They want to continue to play politics the way it they think it's always been played. And it's for that reason that the American population is denying, you know, association with a party. The other thing that I find very interesting is that, you know, of course, initially when you put out, as I said, a poster that has Barack Obama with a Hitler mustache, a lot of the people who come up, you know, are Republicans or will identify themselves in that way or as conservative. And it's funny because then they'll ask you, they'll be very skeptical, and people are very untrusting in many ways. As we've pointed out, I enjoy pointing out to people who are major addicts of Fox News, that you know you're dealing with an institution which is owned by Rupert Murdoch, and you know you say, well, you know Rupert Murdoch's daughter was one of a major fundraiser for Barack Obama.
Okay.
I mean, you're dealing with something that's very funny here. And so then they know that the media is very problematic. So then they will. So they want to know what party you're part of or whether you identify yourself as conservative. And I'll tell them that we're FDR Democrats. We're Democrats in the tradition of FDR, but what we really are is constitutionalists. And you start going through what that represents. And it's funny because a lot of times Republicans would have a knee-jerk reaction to the name of Franklin Roosevelt. Now, many of them will say, no, you know, I used to be a Democrat myself, or no, I agree with FDR, actually. I mean, if you're an FDR Democrat or a Kennedy Democrat, I can go with that. You know, it's these other ones, which, you know, these other ones are doing the exact same things in many ways that the Bush administration did. So, you know, you get that sense that what you're dealing with here is a period in time when the party system is not working, and that's where we do come in. Because we represent the Constitution.
Right. Just to pick up what you said, I think Mr. LaRouche was talking with staff this morning, and he put it this way. There is a choice, just two, for people. It's traitors or patriots. You're right. The Republicans and Democrats, as such, doesn't hold the same way in party terms. It's just traitors or patriots, certainly for congressmen and for citizens. Let me ask go back to Michelle on this, because I think that we've discussed the subjective reaction, the tremendous, you know what I mean, reaching into people's American heritage in the best sense, that people, we're Americans, this stinks, something's wrong here, even if we're seeing all these ads on what you're supposed to buy and how you're supposed to be small-minded. But could you go into now some objectively some of the British pedigree side, just in a briefing way if you wish, or anyway, about the horrendous activation, especially of some of the British empire. I'm talking about imperial operations. You mentioned terrorism.
Right.
So you mentioned, take any one of the aspects. You did a survey just a minute ago, but take the danger that you referred to in the way of the British imperial assets in Israel and Iran and so forth. Could you go into that more?
Sure. First, I'd like to refer everyone to a December 29th statement by Lyndon LaRouche, in which Lynn said, only the four powers' cooperation can avoid a Middle East trigger for World War III. And that is on both the EIR website and the LaRouche Political Action Committee, LPAC, website. People can print out copies of that. They can email it to thousands of people. And this is very important, because what's going on right now, for anybody who cares about our foreign policy, and I think one of the things that brought Barack Obama into power was the tremendous disgust, a patriotic reaction of the American people against the Bush-Cheney being puppets for a neo-imperial policy. So everybody had their eye on the Iraq War, the Afghanistan War, and wanted, hoped against hope, and LaRouche warned them that you're never going to get anything good from an American president unless that president is first and foremost anti-British. And when Lynn saw Barack Obama and Michelle Obama make their visit in early April to Buckingham Palace and to London for the G20 meeting, and the Obamas were patting the behind of the evil little queen and hugging her and so forth, it was clear that Barack Obama does not have the psychological makeup to be a patriotic president, and he's such a narcissist that he'll do anything to stay in the spotlight and so forth. So we are in a trap right now where nothing positive has been done on the Iraq front, the Afghanistan front, or the Israel-Palestine front, despite the fact that we have the best diplomatic team that I've known in my lifetime. And I've been working on U.S. policy on Southwest Asia and the Middle East for 30 years. This is the best chance with George Mitchell as the special envoy, Hillary Clinton as the Secretary of State. This is the best chance we ever had in terms of a diplomatic team to bring about peace in the Middle East. What's missing? You can't do anything unless the President of the United States is a patriotic American. And this President is, as they said in Seattle, he's a ho-ho-ho for the British. That was a sign. We'll hear more about that. Barack Obama dressed up as Santa Claus with a Hitler mustache. So you have a situation where the biggest British puppet of any head of state is Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel. His father was the secretary for an actual Jewish fascist, Jabotinsky, who actually was part of the Jewish faction who wrote for and collaborated with Benito Mussolini. Made no secret about it. They wrote columns, his movement, Reflections of a Jewish Fascist in the 1920s. So Netanyahu's pedigree is very, very much of this British-backed Jabotinskyite movement. So Netanyahu has been able to face down the intents of the United States and say, we're not going to have peace. We're going to pursue a strike, a military strike against Iran. And they put a deadline of it, of the end of 2009. That is they, the British and Netanyahu, that either there was a quote-unquote breakthrough in diplomatic relations with Iran, or the war attack would be on the agenda. Well, in recent weeks, this has heated up over the boiling point to the point of a possible explosion, especially with the hard line coming down against the opposition inside Iran. A very, very bloody series of arrests and the assassination, or I should say, execution on December 27th of Ali Mousavi, the nephew of the former presidential candidate Hussein Mousavi, whose life is now under threat. Now, in this context, with a human rights debacle going on in before everyone's eyes, because you have a lot of people that have cell phones with cameras in them and so forth, and they can take pictures of what's going on and smuggle them out very, very easily, almost instantaneously. The British have taken the opportunity to jack up the whole Israeli threat of an attack against Iran. And the danger, Marcia, is that it's not going to be a conventional attack because what Lynn's assessment is, in consultation with the many, many, many military experts that he's known over the decades and speaks to on regular basis and so forth, a conventional attack it's not possible to knock out Iran's nuclear research or enrichment capability with a conventional attack from Israel. So the threat of Israeli nuclear strikes is a factor that is very, very real. Now, what Linda LaRouche emphasized is a strategy which is very, very much parallel and part and parcel of the reorganization of the whole financial structure, which is for a just economic order. The four power agreement among the United States, Russia, China, and India. So Lyndon LaRouche has emphasized that in the interests of the United States, Russia, China, and India, as well as the neighboring states to Iran, for the threat of an Israeli attack to be removed. And what Mr. LaRouche said in this statement is, we're facing an immediate threat of war, possibly nuclear war. Only a four powers concerted effort can prevent this. There's a nuclear threat against Iran coming from Israel. Israel is acting as a Sykes-Picot puppet of London. And the Iranians know this. But we cannot allow this British manipulated situation to continue. It would mean the destruction of India, the destruction of Pakistan, and chaos throughout the extended region were the Israelis allowed to carry out an attack. We must prevent such an Israeli action, and we must prevent the present Iranian government from obtaining nuclear weapons. That can only be accomplished by a concerted effort by the four powers. Nothing short of that. Nothing short of that four powers agreement could trump the British game. So, a concerted intervention, as LaRouche explains, by these four powers to secure an agreement from Iran on the nuclear fuel issue. That also guarantees that they will not be subject to a London-ordered attack from Israel is absolutely possible if LaRouche's strategy to bring the United States into this four-power agreement functions. The alternative, we don't want to think about the alternative. The alternative is a perpetual war in the heartland of Eurasia. And it is totally unacceptable, no matter how much the hysterics of the British monarchy carry on to make it happen. Now, I'll just add one thing on this. And before, again, sort of laying out the what I understand from working with Mr. LaRouche is really what's our strategic objective in the United States as a political movement here. To add, the British Empire is extremely weak. They went all out with a strategy for Copenhagen, which was to basically outlaw industrial development for not only the undeveloped sector, but for the industrial countries as well. Using carbon emissions as a means of a phony argument, a lie, that they would be able to stop, to grind down any kind of output in the physical economy, at the same time using the nuclear weapons scare, the WMD scare, to try and slow down or stop the development of nuclear power, which is the real answer to even the basic arguments of the Greens. So here you have the Greens screaming about carbon emissions and then screaming about nuclear power, which would eliminate the problem of carbon emissions. So the British failed miserably on this. And in that context, they're not about to give up and say, okay, guys, you really got us this time. We did not succeed in the genocide agenda. No, they're fighting for their financial, geopolitical lives, and only a patriotic movement such as we have can do this. Now, in the United States, we've got a dictatorship on the healthcare front, and we have a dictatorship on the financial front, which is indicated in this week's decision to vastly expand the bailout of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. That is unlimited bailouts. We've already spent like $24 trillion in bailing out the Wall Street bankers, and now they're doing another push through the Treasury Department. Without consulting the Congress and the American people. We have a attempted coup with this secret clause of the healthcare death panel, which we already discussed. And then on the environmentalist genocide front, you have another move to try and implement dictatorship by implementing, through the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, a finding that carbon dioxide is a deadly toxic gas, so we all better stop breathing immediately or get arrested for heavy breathing. All of these things point to the most fast-moving unitary executive, a continuation of the Bush-Cheney administration. This gets us to the point I think that Rihanna was emphasizing. Parties don't mean anything. You've got patriots in both parties, and you've got fascists in both parties. So the issue is, are you an anti-fascist? Are you against an oligarchic one-world dictatorship? And I think if we have it that clearly spelled out, people are going to choose what's obvious.
Right, and Rihanna, you may want to say more. You mentioned before that the demographics of the response of that you were describing over the holiday period, which is a real litmus test for being human and not crazy, are across the board. But do you want to say more about that, whether it's youth, whether it's the older age groups, or any differentiation that's important to bring out?
Well, yeah, and again, I think that this is it's interesting because you are getting some of the younger people, you're particularly getting a reflex from people who were who are the children of the baby boomers, people who compose in the age bracket who make up the majority of what we're still calling the LaRouche Youth Movement. People in their, between the ages of around 25 to 35. And a lot of these individuals who knew us when they were on college campuses are seeing us again now that they have families or have tried to pursue a career and are having their worlds turned upside down and are remembering us and often coming out and wanting to organize, like I said. Then there's another segment of the population, the older segment, the between generation, and they tend to have thought that they were going to get on board with the new economy. And, you know, a lot of these guys who work at Microsoft and whatnot, they thought they were going to make it. A number of them did become millionaires overnight and have now seen almost all of it disappear. And it's funny because they tend to be a very difficult demographic to organize, particularly in Seattle, where they, you know, they kind of think of themselves, you know, it's a little bit ironic, but in a little bit of Bill Clinton's golden generation terms, they think that they're better than the baby boomer generation, and that they really are powerful. They're seeing a lot of that erode. And at this point, you know, some of the better jokes were coming from people, very unlikely people who work at Microsoft. One man asked me if I, you know, because I was briefing him on the troops to Afghanistan that Obama was sending, and the irony of his accepting the Nobel Peace Prize in Oslo with a speech about how war is peace. And I said, well, doesn't that make you feel a little bit like you're in 1984? And the gentleman said, oh, you mean you're not for Yes, We Canistan?
Oh.
And that's the I guess that, you know, Microsoft played a major role in, at least in this area, in mobilizing people to vote for Barack Obama. So the fact that this is going around the halls of Microsoft, I think, is very interesting. And then you have the older generation, and there's a number of people who are in retirement age who do understand what the nature of this bill really is. There's a lot of confusion. And, you know, you've seen some funny things, like during the August period where you had signs that said, get the government off my Medicare. And you're like, well,
yeah, it's confusing, all right.
There's a little bit of confusion about the relationship of the government and the people. But then on the other hand, you have people who really do understand that this is about cuts in Medicare, that this is about them, and that their lives are in danger. And they tend to be very serious. And again, part of the issue that we're dealing with is fear, because people do have a sense of what Michelle is talking about. And you don't have to say very much about Copenhagen, about the Lisbon Treaty, and, you know, the loss of sovereignty of the European Union, which is why we really can't get any help from there, because they are, countries like Germany, are under the thumb of the British, really. And so, you know, people don't need a lot of explanation to get that. But then the other problem you face is that they're afraid, and they are as afraid of this administration as they were of the Bush-Cheney administration in terms of leaving a name and number. People are afraid that they're going to, you know, they're going to have their phones tapped or whatnot, just as they did during the Bush administration. And one of the things that has been very good about our very, I'll say, loud presence, although not verbally loud, but very, very visually present, our very visually present presence on the streets of Seattle, is that they get a sense that they're not alone. And that's been one of the biggest things that's occurred during our organizing this Christmas season. Is that people will continually ask, oh, wow, I can't believe you're here. Gosh, I think I'm totally alone. And you say, no, you're not. Everybody actually agrees with you, or the majority does. What we're dealing with is actually a minority of people and a media that has convinced people that they're in the minority. And when they overcome the fear, then people often feel very relieved, and that's when they do. They want to organize. They want to be out there, and they want to help make this happen, because they do have a sense that this is urgent.
Well, I think, Rihanna, you might be able to say more, but I think from working inside Washington, looking at some of the think tanks, websites, etc., in our intelligence work, I'm seeing a rapid splintering of party lines, right? I think what we're going to see in the next immediate period is that the so-called liberal or left people who were backing Obama, probably along the lines of what you said about the Microsoft demographic, they're going to start absolutely breaking from this situation. We've seen this with popular liberal websites like FireDogLake.com, where they want Rahm Emanuel fired. They're absolutely blasting anybody in the Democratic Party or the liberals who support this health care bill as reform, saying that it's total nonsense. And I think we're going to see that in the population. We've already seen part of that in coming from the Black Caucus. But I'd like to ask you, Rihanna, about two things that I think you could really illuminate us on. One is the work that you and others who've been involved in the Basement Project and the LIM are doing on the Moon Mars Project, because this science driver in the sense of optimism, LaRouche keeps stressing how important this is, not just as a psychological uplifting experience, but from a real physical economy standpoint. And then the second thing is anything you can tell us about our three flagship campaigns, Summer Justice Shields, Rachel Brown, and Keisha Rogers.
Okay. those are both big.
Yeah, right. Well, we can go another
And you
2 hours.
can do it all in 14 minutes. No, I'm just kidding.
I'll help you.
Well, yeah, I would say, in terms of the basement work, LaRouche put forward this challenge to really address what would be needed to in the next 40 years have a colony on Mars, a science colony, and to really go forward with this policy. And it is a redirection of a lot of the scientific work that we've been engaged in over the last decade. Really, I mean, Lyndon LaRouche put forward sort of an educational program for the youth movement fairly early on, because it was clear that although many of us were very enthusiastic and many of us had been to universities, we really didn't know anything at all, and particularly nothing real about science. And that's a whole other topic. But we have spent a good deal of time on Kepler's discovery of universal gravitation, and many people in the movement have a sense of that. What I found very interesting, just off the bat, about starting to really look at what would be required to, say, set up an industry on the moon, for instance, and what you would need in order to have an industry there that would then produce what was required for, the next step of setting up some sort of a living habitation on Mars. Is that all of the things that we've sort of been studying and looking into and digging into have a very different feeling to them when you start to think of them in those terms. Also, this is an immediate question about our orientation to the future and the reality of our mortality and what we do with our life, which is something that LaRouche talks about a great deal. But in a funny way, because the culture has been so damaged, people tend to, at least in my experience, they tend to think about their existence on a day-to-day basis. And it's sort of funny. One of my fellow organizers was pointing it out to me after a number of days of we had been in the same spot downtown with some of these signs that have been described, the Barack Obama with the Hitler mustache and a Santa hat and a fake Santa beard with a speech bubble that says, "I'm a ho, ho, ho for the British." And it's funny because that you've run into a number of these people day after day. But every time they see you, it's as if they saw you for the first time. And my fellow organizer said it's almost as if they don't have any connection to even their immediate past. And I think that a lot of people live their lives in such a way. And that also they live their lives in a way that they never feel the reality of it. And I don't know how else to put it. It's as if they're not really in their own shoes, that they're sort of watching something from a distance that they're not exactly participating in, or they don't have a full feeling for the implications of what their life means. And talking to particularly to young people, but actually to everyone, about an idea for a national mission, the idea of having a purpose as an entire country. And the Apollo project, for many people, is very palpable in that way. They immediately have a sense that there was a time when our nation had a real mission, not just in terms of the American Revolution, but something more recent. And the Apollo project really is the last time, I think, that people have that sense. Reading a lot of the anecdotal literature from the period of the Tennessee Valley Authority and the Grand Coulee Dam, the Rural Electrification Administration, the New Deal, you see that there as well. But for people, particularly in the boomer generation and younger, Apollo is really, they still have a connection to it. And this also is a way that you get some of these younger people to have an immediate sense of the reality of discussing some of these issues like gravitation or space or time or matter, and how you would actually approach these from what you would experience going to space. You think that there's a lot of empty space between us and the moon, or, you know, whatever it is, 94 million miles to the sun. But you find out very rapidly that it's not all that empty. There's a lot of electromagnetic activity going on, among other things. So that's one area where, and I know the basement currently, the current group is in producing a new video. They made one called From the Moon to Mars, which is very inspiring. And they're currently making a sort of a sequel to that. And that represents, in a sense, the forefront of our policy as an economic policy. And that's what you have these three candidates orienting their congressional campaigns around nationally. So although we have a candidate running against Barney Frank in Boston, and we have a candidate running against Pete Olson in Texas, and one running against Nancy Pelosi in California and San Francisco, they're all running a national campaign. And of course, that gets into a lot of other details about all of the policy issues that are required in terms of how we get our economy back to what it's supposed to be. But the Moon-Mars idea is very much at the center of what we're driving for. And that's in a lot of ways, that is going to be the litmus test for my generation, and the younger one as well, for the 18 to 25, the current 18 to 25 year olds, whether we will be lost or whether we will have made a real mark on history and can say, you know, to the future generations and looking back at our ancestors, look, we did something, we contributed something good to humanity.
Great, thank you. And that's certainly that vantage point, you know, as from which one knows one is alive with a mission, is certainly it's just an entirely different domain from the kinds of dirty operations and pulling people down that Michelle was filling us in on that are going on now. I wonder, we only have a few minutes left. It sounds like from the sublime to the ridiculous, Michelle. But do you want to say any more about how blatant, you mentioned the underwear bomber, the way this is being thrown up against Americans, that it isn't just, let's take this terrorism seriously, it's coming from these, you know, they used to say bat caves. But in fact, it's Londonistan, and we name it, and it's done.
It is from the sublime to the ridiculous, because it's ridiculous how the same dirty operations and tricks work generation after generation. I'd rather personally stay on the Mars mission, but I think to make short shrift of the whole issue of Yemen, because we are now seeing a lot of talk about sanctions against Yemen, possible invasions of Yemen.
Does George Brown or Gordon Brown want to? Is there supposed to be even a summit on Yemen?
Yes, yes. Okay, just to backtrack for listeners, on Christmas Eve day, I guess it was, a explosive device failed to go off on this Northwest Airlines flight. And the young man accused, captured on the scene, a Nigerian young man. Turns out he's got a British pedigree a mile long. Now, there were a lot of intelligence failures, like his own father, who's not just a rich banker from Nigeria, he's the former finance minister of the country of Nigeria, went to the U.S. Embassy, said, "I'm worried about my son. He's disappeared. He's spouting all this radical Islamic threatening type of talk, and just be aware, that I'm concerned about it, and I want you to be on the lookout for him." And despite that kind of very, 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 very clear warning from a former high-level official of a foreign government, a friendly government to the United States, the watch list failure, et cetera, it turns out that the individual disappeared from a university in Dubai, which EIR just, I just wrote a big article about. Dubai is Londonistan, London's terrorist drug money laundering in the Middle East. So there were many, many, many red flags that could have, stopped this fellow from getting on the airplane to Detroit, Michigan. There was a visa problem that was reported when he was in Amsterdam and so forth. So it didn't make any sense. And then he gets on, and this so-called bomb that he has fails to detonate. Was he not trained? Was he drugged? There's some eyewitness accounts that he was very sluggish and couldn't even speak to authorities to talk his way onto the plane. He had to have help from a mysterious older gentleman, etc. There's a lot of loose ends, but it doesn't add up at all that this operation was so sloppy, except as a possible test or a probe for a bigger operation that is in the offing. And as Lyndon LaRouche was saying today, this is also a test. How much are you going to take? Are you going to fight back? Or, the London footprint is so obvious here. Are you going to take it? And he said, no. The message is, you don't do this to the United States. And he mentioned the Japanese made a big, big mistake with their attack on Pearl Harbor and the kind of patriotic response. So if we can get the understanding of the British Empire behind this anti-human policy, this drive for war, this drive for financial dictatorship, we're going to be able to make a miracle in terms of reorganizing the world financial situation. And what Rihanna was talking about, the question of immortality, of our own immortality, which is a good message for the beginning of a new year, the beginning of a new decade. What is life is about? Friedrich Schiller, who Helga Zeplerush introduced us to, wrote the William Tell, an echo in honor of the American Revolution, in which the famous phrase appears, "There is a limit to the tyrant's power." And the kind of intellectual work, the work, the cognition that describes us, that determines that we are human, this is our humanity, that is in the science work and the LaRouche plan for physical economy. This is the way of the future. And I think that's what we're looking at going into this next week.
Right. And Rihanna, from your vantage point, if you think of the vantage point of the moon, if not Mars, but let's think of Mars way in the future. But you look down back on Earth, you're on the Pacific Rim. I'm getting geographical now on our own planet. But do you find, speaking of the demographics of where you are, that there's any echelon of the population, maybe not Microsoft, but you're there where you look across the Great Sea and you have most of the population of the world, 3.5 to 4 billion people almost in Eurasia. Do you find people respond once you are organizing with them to any sense of what we could be doing here?
Yeah, well, certainly. And, you know, I mean, tied to this question of the space program, people are responding to the idea that India will put a man into space in the next 5 years. And that's, you know, I think that also, I mean, we do have a very significant Asian population here. And although within the, you know, so-called conservative circles, you see a lot of knee-jerk reaction to both the idea of China and Russia, there is a growing awareness for a lot of people that China right now represents their interest in a very real way, the interest of developing populations. And the stand that they took at Copenhagen and the fact that you have these economic development proposals going forward between China and Russia and China and India, and also the fact that China is taking a lot of heat from the British directly now for their relationships with both Africa and Southwest Asia. That you see a sense that with the United States with a sane leader and oriented to our Constitution as we are wont to do, that we really can build a new world, and that world will be oriented around the Pacific.
Well, that's great. And unfortunately, well, it's predictable maybe that we did go beyond the hour because it's gone really fast. This is the new year. And with that positive note, that it's self-evidently human to work together with the human race to go to space. Thank you, Rhianna Nordquist. We'll have to close. Thank you, Michelle Steinberg. This has been the LaRue Show, January 2nd, 2010. Happy New Year. It will be momentous. Thank you.